I remember December of that year, we completely stopped running ads and we're doing $80,000 a day with no ads.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
All right, everyone, what's going on today's show? We have Daniel Snow. Daniel is a serial entrepreneur with experience ranging from scaling multiple e-commerce brands to the 7- and 8-figure plus mark in revenue, launching a digital marketing agency called The Snow Agency that now employs more than 90 employees. He's the owner of Rap TV. It's at Rap on Twitter, and they have over 15 employees and 8 different Snapchat shows that run constantly. And on top of all of that, Daniel also owns 8 figures worth of real estate portfolio split between residential and commercial. So Daniel, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me.
Honestly, man, you have a lengthy resume. I feel like there's a very high chance that we record here for like 50 minutes and we don't get nearly that deep into any of these categories. So I want to at least like give people a glimpse into like where you are at such a young age, which makes this conversation really cool. I don't want this just to be like, tell me about Rap TV and tell me about like the Snow Agency. Like, I want to like kind of dive into like how you think about like building businesses and like growing wealth and like what your goals are and like all that kind of stuff. Just like life and business and all of that, getting to this episode. I think maybe the first place to start is when I hear of a rap sheet like yours, where like you've got all of these cool things ranging across all these industries, from like the advertising to the e-commerce to like media to real estate, like everything in between. All I can think about is like, damn, Daniel's probably stressed a lot. Do you find that like, and I know you're living down in sunny Miami, so like, you find that you're stressed a lot just managing and running all of these different teams across all of these different sectors?
There's ebbs and flows. I mean, there's definitely certain time periods where, and you know, certain businesses are a lot more taxing, so to speak, than others. So I would say, especially when you're really just agencies, I feel like it's impossible to avoid that just because it's so people centric, you know, that's like what the business essentially is. And with that just comes a lot of things pop up that can be very stressful. So to be honest, a lot of the stress comes from just managing a lot of people and a lot of clients. There's, you know, in our Slack chat, we have like, you know, including our employees and our external teams, like could be like 400 or 500 people. There's just like nonstop things going on. And a lot of it get, you know, and the problems get escalated to me. So there's definitely stress that comes with just running an agency. I think any agency owner can resonate with that. Instead of stress coming from all the different stuff I'm managing. I mean, sure, there's bits and pieces, whether it be real estate or, you know, the Rap TV, stuff like that. But yeah, that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's good to know. I think right now, so it seems like most of the e-commerce brands at this point, and we'll get into your whole story and everything here in just a minute, but like most of those e-commerce brands that you really built and scaled up, at this point you've exited. I think you just started another one that's kind of like being incubated within the Snow Agency. So we'll chat about that too. But it seems like right now you've got 3 main things on your plate. Maybe it's really 2 with like the real estate stuff being more of like a side gig, where it's the Snow Agency, Rap TV, and then I would say like, you know, you've got 10 properties, right, between residential and commercial. So how do you typically split your time today? Is it like most of the time's going to the agency and you're kind of hiring out property managers and executives to the Rap TV side?
Yeah, so and definitely core, I'm definitely spending time there as well, since in the last 4 weeks since we launched. But I would say the agency takes up a majority of my time right now, and it has since I launched it 3 years ago, for sure. You know, I'm definitely spending more time on Rap TV over the last 18 months, just because the team is growing, the company is growing, all the different facets of the business are growing. It's just a lot more dynamic than it was maybe 2 years ago, and it was mainly just an Instagram page. You know, now it's, we have a huge following on all the platforms. We're creating media. We're, you know, we have partnerships. We have, you know, it's built into, at this point, a proper organization. So I'm spending a lot more time there overseeing, you know, strategy, team, hiring, building the organization, et cetera. Spending more time on Chloro since it's launched, really getting deep in the weeds on strategy, marketing, optimization, stuff like that. And I really don't spend much time on the property, on my real estate portfolio. I have a property manager and, you know, he escalates problems to me, but there's really not that many problems that are going on. You know, when something needs to get fixed, I say, okay, fix it.
Yeah.
Send me all to bed.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take up, like, it takes up like a fraction of my time.
Yeah. That's the nice part about real estate too, is like, typically with a lot of other businesses, right? Like Wrap TV, like the problems that you might be facing would be like, you know, marketing problems or like partnership problems and like trying to like expand and grow the name. With the agency side, it's a lot of like personnel problems and human problems. The nice part about real estate, for better or worse, is like most of the problems that occur, like, can pretty much always be fixed with money, which, you know, sometimes sucks. It's like, like a pipe burst, or like, we need like new lights or whatever like that. Like, it just costs money, but it's not necessarily like this employee is very disgruntled at this client because of like X, Y, and Z reasons. Like, they're much more simple issues.
Yeah, most of the time. Well, there is random stuff that still happens. Still have people in there complaining about the most random things I would never imagine. But for the most part, yeah, it's pretty black and white, which is nice. Yeah.
Do you have like a preference? And so that's kind of like where you're spending most of your time. Sounds like the agency, the new brand y'all are launching, and then like Wrap TV, because it's growing a little bit more, like it's picking up more and more. Do you have like a preference though, in terms of like the type of work that you guys like to do? So like, I don't know, for me personally, and maybe you can relate here, is like, I have like that shiny object syndrome, where like that going from like nothing to like a landing page with functional ads that are like, you know, getting the initial couple of sales, is like the most fun for me. Cause I can just be super creative. I can try a bunch of stuff and like test, iterate. But the stuff that really is not fun for me is like, okay, now let's go through and like systemize the operations and like make these SOPs and hire and manage and train these teams. Do you have areas like skill wise or like development size of companies where you'd like to kind of spend more of that time?
Yeah, I would say me as well. Like, starting is definitely what I enjoy most, that going from zero to one. And I would say it's also what I'm very, very good at. I would say, same, similar to you, process and whatnot is definitely not the biggest strong suit of mine, nor is it what I enjoy most doing. But, you know, that's why you build a team. And at least in the agency, my it's also my brother, my partner, is the COO. He handles a lot of the process building and system management and all that stuff. But yeah, I definitely enjoy, generally speaking, strategy, and being able to be creative and whatnot. Just most about, you know, whether it be Wrap TV or the agency or the brands, like the strategy portion of it. And giving ideas that come into fruition is definitely what I enjoy most and really what I'm best at. And putting the roadmap together, like, this is how we're going to scale. And then finding great people that can, you know, help me put that into life. So that's definitely what I enjoy most. And also it was a big reason behind the inspiration behind even launching an agency, because, you know, what I initially thought was that, you know, it allows me to scratch that itch, so to speak, for many brands all the time, instead of what I was doing before. You know, had a portfolio of a few brands, running the same brands for 3 years, which got to be a bit mundane. So yeah,
I feel like the nice part about the agency is you get to scratch that shiny object syndrome, like, itch all the time. You're like, oh, nice, like, we just unloaded a ceramics company. Oh, a candle company's on now. Oh, we got a toothpaste company. Like, and so you get to see all of these different brands. I feel like that's the nice side. The downside is when, like, you crush it for all the brands and you're like, I wish we could take some of this upside. Like, I wish like this could have been our brand as well, that like we're scaling up. So like, but I guess depending on how you structure your fees and stuff like that, you can still capture some of that. But I guess maybe now is probably like a good point in the conversation, just to like get more of that background in terms of like how you got started. I think when we were chatting the other week, it's been like 10 years for you now into this entrepreneurial game. If I have my stories and my stats right here, like, basically you started making like $45 a week back in 2012 on Twitter. Do you want to maybe give like, and feel free to brag, because I think it just makes the story way more interesting, kind of like a synopsis version of like what happened from 2012 to kind of like where you're at today?
Yeah, so December of 2012 is when I first started. It's coming up on a decade, which is crazy and scary. So I got started. I was a biology major in college. I was accelerated dental program. And I'll preface that to say, like, I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. In fact, like, I wanted to do, you know, business in college. I just didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what business I could create. some, you know, pressure from the family. It was like, oh, I guess I can be a dentist and still work for myself. So I always knew that. December of 2012, winter break during my sophomore year of college, my friend told me that he was making, like you mentioned, $45 a week on Twitter. Blew my mind. I left the gym. Conversation happened in the gym. And I made a Twitter account. I was really into fitness at the time. So it was a fitness and motivation account. And my goal was to make $45 a week so I could have some spending money on the weekends. And by the summer, I was making, I think, like $100 a day.
Let me jump in here too real quick, because I think people are going to listen to this and they're going to be like, I have a Twitter. Like, how are you making $100 a day? Are you like, is it, are you selling an ebook? Are you doing like affiliate stuff?
So at the time I was monetizing through, there were various websites I would pay you per click you were sending, and there probably still is a lot of this. I was essentially just posting ads and getting paid per click at the time. So it could be because I had a fitness page, you know, it could be sending traffic to, you know, fitness, a lot of it was affiliate based. So like fitness affiliate landing pages, stuff like that, whether it be lead gen or paper per sale, but I was getting paid per click. So that's how I was making money at the time. Then by the summer, I was monetizing mainly through content blogs. So think like BuzzFeed style articles that were typically monetized through Google AdWords and Taboola and Outbrain and all that. Back, you know, 2012 to 2013, you could really just make a lot more money, I feel like, at the time. Like CPMs were a lot higher. Click-through rates were a lot higher on that. You could be a lot more aggressive than you can now on these types of content blogs. So that's what I was doing at the time. Anyways, kept growing my following and started testing all different ways to monetize. So started creating my own content blogs. Started getting into affiliate marketing myself. Instead of getting paid per click, I was reaching out to the advertisers directly, doing that. Had a few apps that were really successful. An app store that'd be free and paid, had a few apps in the top 50 overall for both categories, games, music apps, a bunch of random things. And then I really wanted to build a book. I noticed that a lot of the publishers, as they call it on Twitter at the time, who had, you know, millions of followers, et cetera, because the space was so new as well, a lot of these kids were 15, 16, 17, 18, and had no idea how to monetize, didn't have the means to create their own websites, didn't know how to build a team, how to hire people, et cetera, et cetera. They just knew how to retweet and grow a following, and that was it. So I really wanted to build a platform that made it easy for these types of people to make money. And that's really what I had my my focus on. So going into my senior year of college, that summer, when I was actually going to the library every day, studying for my DATs, I had built a platform with a partner. He was in the technical end, and I brought a lot of the offers, brought all of the affiliates to the platform, et cetera. At the time, we were just all the Twitter publishers. And the platform just immediately blew up. I think that summer, we did like $800,000 in revenue or something along those lines. And, you know, I was like, you know,
This is Caffeine Digital, right?
Digital, yeah. So I was like, I'm making more money in a summer than I would have made in a year as a dentist after $500,000 in 4 years of my life to be a dentist, which I don't even want to do. And it was at that point where I decided I'm not going to be a dentist. So I actually got up a lot of pushback from my family and whatnot after I didn't go to dental school and kept pursuing this ambiguous online thing, you know, which was still really new at the time.
What year was this too?
2014.
Okay, because I think I have a note here from our conversation the other week that said in May alone, and in parentheses it says like, I think 2015, you did 2 million plus in sales. Is that 15 or 14?
That was 2015. So okay. It was summer of 2014 was when I started it. And then I graduated May of 2015. So May 2015 was when we were really scaling. I know at one point, so that month we did, like you mentioned, over 2 million in revenue. And this was with no full-time employees, just like thousands of affiliates, a few part-time affiliate managers were just getting paid on commission, and crazy profit margins.
Yeah. And at this point too, like, cause I gotta imagine, so you got past that pushback of like the, hey, listen guys, I'm not gonna be a dentist, convince them like you're going out doing your own thing. Now flash forward like basically a year, you know, what, I don't know what this would be for you. I guess it would be your 22nd birthday or something like that, doing 2 million plus a year. It's like something in that ballpark.
Just turned 22.
You say you just turned 22. Like, are you, you seem like a humble guy, so I don't know if the answer is yes or no, but like, are you, like, do your parents know at this point that you were crushing it at this level?
They were 100% giving me shit. I don't think I told them exact numbers, but they probably got an idea because, you know, that year I bought a Maserati. I bought a brand new condo on the Hudson River.
No fucking
so, like, man. They had an idea, but I don't think I gave them numbers. Like, that year, you know, my senior college, I paid over 7 figures in taxes, which was, like, fucking just, yeah, like...
Just heartbreaking. But I got to imagine from your parents' perspective, it's either, like, they're probably thinking to themselves, like, all right, he's either doing really well with his digital marketing stuff, or Daniel is trafficking so many drugs.
Yeah, no, they definitely might have thought that. Anyways, they definitely didn't support it just because, like, it was still so new to them at the time, and they thought it could be something that's not sustainable. So they just didn't support it for that reason because they really just didn't understand it. But at the same time, it's like, I knew that with how much success I had being still a full-time college student, like, this is something that I should pursue for many reasons, including that it was really what I was passionate about.
It's so tough from, like, a parent's perspective, because, like, I totally understand. At the end of the day, your parents just want you to be, like, happy and, like, successful and, like, do what's best for you. But, like, even if it wasn't sustainable, let's say that, like, the thing died out, like, 3 months later, and you had, like, a couple months of making, like, a few million a month. Like, that's more than, like, 99.9% of people make in a given lifetime. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, the sustainability element's tough for me to even see, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it didn't make any sense. But, you know, just that was just their, like, perspective on it. But once again, it's like, I don't think I was sharing specific numbers with them. They just, let, you know. So, but yeah, that's literally how I was rationalizing. It's like every, you know, 1 month, like, that's, like, could be a decade of work, let's say. So it's like, it's definitely worth my time. So that's what I ended up doing. And thank God it ended up working out so far.
I think you transitioned to e-commerce businesses after that, but before we even get into maybe some of the examples, because I think the way you, we didn't even get into, like, how you, like, ideate and, like, think about launching products and stuff like that. That might actually be a pretty interesting topic. But, like, before we even get into that, did you sell Caffeine Digital, or what did you do afterwards?
I kind of just let it fizzle out. I've never really, there was an offer to us, but it was more so, like, equity for equity, which I really wasn't interested in, especially because we were making so much money. Like, why would I want equity in another company which is no longer liquid? Like, that didn't make any sense to me.
And wait, but because I know, I just have to push you a little bit more, because I know people are gonna listen to this and be like, wait a second, like, something's not totally making sense. Let's say, like, even if May was, like, the total peak month of, like, 2 million and, like, you guys were averaging, like, you know, 500,000 or 750 a month or whatever like that the rest of the year, you know, you got like an 8-figure brand there. Like, the idea, yeah, of, like, letting it just kind of, like, fizzle out is, I don't know, strange. Like, it just, did you hire operators, and is it still running today? Or is it like, hey, listen, we just had way bigger opportunities doing other stuff. Like, I don't know, for some reason for me right now, just, like, conceptually making $1 million a month seems like it is too good of an opportunity just to let fizzle out.
So there was a lot of problems that came about. Number one, we had problems with my partner. Number two, it was really a lot affiliate based. So at the time, Instagram started banning the links that we were using for affiliate. You know, they started banning even pages that were posting these types of ads, just like these, like, different trackers and stuff like that. So compliance started getting a lot harder. Another issue is that, you know, the advertisers kept going up and down. So, like, they would cap offers, they were changing a lot of the offers that were working really well. And the space itself, because a lot of these, the ads that we had through our platform were affiliate based. So the whole affiliate industry was really changing dramatically in 2015 to 2017. And just having problems with my partner. So
okay. No, I feel like that's, and honestly, all of that stuff is, like, super common and, like, totally makes sense. I just like to kind of hear, like, I feel like I've gotten shit before for recording podcasts where someone's like, yeah, you know, we started this business, required, like, 100,000. And, like, I didn't push back where it's like, yeah, where did you get the 100,000 from? Like, people like to just kind of know these details and, like, hearing stuff like that too. Like, you kind of learn the affiliate game, you learn what it's like to build a platform, which is probably translated super well into Rap TV now, I would imagine. But, like, cool to just kind of hear, like, the backstory a little bit in terms of, like, yeah, where attention shifted.
Yeah, I mean, and at the time, it's like, I really didn't know it was sellable because a lot of the different, like, things about the company. So we just never really went out of our way to try and sell it, and because it was still making money, mm-hmm. which, again, it's like, I should have tried selling it. We just never even tried doing that because, you know, me and my partner at the time had a lot of differences.
Yeah.
So decided to just keep the platform going as is, and, you know, kind of, like, it definitely wasn't the right move, but, like, that's what ended up happening. Yeah. So started launching some e-com brands also at the time while I still had the platform, but really, so July 2016 was when I launched GoatCase, which was really the first big brand. And GoatCase just exploded when we launched it. GoatCase was a phone case that can essentially stick to things, like stick to mirrors and glass and wood, stuff like that. And definitely knew we had something special because our second day, we were already doing like $20,000 a day in revenue.
Damn. And yeah. you just got like the product market fit. Like, because I feel like what happens oftentimes is you'll start running ads, you'll like create like 5 or 6 different hooks and different positionings, whatever like that. And then you're like, okay, let's keep refining this. And it takes a couple months, but like you guys just hit the nail on the head of like, chicks probably want to like put their like phone on like a mirror to play music or something like that while they're getting ready or something like that.
So the video that really worked was a video of showing all the different ways you can use it. So it spoke to all the different people, you know, sticking it on your mirror to do makeup, sticking it, you know, in the gym to take selfies, sticking it on your car to film yourself skateboarding, like sticking it to follow, you know, kitchen to follow a cooking recipe. Like, so all these different ways. I actually shot that video myself. It took like literally like 10, 12 hours of shooting. We were driving all over New Jersey, my condo, different parts. At the time also, which was interesting, we weren't even doing any paid ads. It was all through the Twitter pages, the Instagram pages.
Really? Oh, that's smart.
This was also pre-algorithm as well. Mm. So it was a lot easier to get predictable reach. So you can pay people and have a really good idea of what to expect. So nowadays, obviously you can no longer do that. So you don't have that luxury. At the time, you know, we scaled this up. We had 6 people just buying shout outs all day long, 1 million impressions a day organically on social media for 6 months. Yeah, it was crazy.
And I feel like you scaled this thing up 6 million in 6 months, first 6 months. Everything was done in house. Then you went on to kind of like, I think my notes here, if they're correct, I got like a shapewear brand doing 23 million in revenue. I've got a toothbrush company. I've got a men's grooming company. Like, you guys just started like saying like, hey, we're really good at acquiring customers through these theme pages, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Let's just go and find any products that have like a large enough TAM and just start launching them and like doing exactly that same playbook.
Yeah. So it was really when, the phone case company was really the only company that we didn't run paid ads for. And also it's because we didn't even have bandwidth or even inventory to increase sales beyond what we were already doing. So it's like, I remember December of that year, we completely stopped running ads and we're doing like $80,000 a day with no ads because we had created such of a viral kind of like brand lift. Like there was that much momentum with people just talking about it, hearing about it.
Such a marketer's dream.
Yeah, I literally. So, we literally didn't have time or bandwidth or anything to learn ads at the time because we were always kept trying to play catch up since the day we launched it. So, and we're fulfilling everything, which was the worst idea ever. Anyways, when we launched Perfect Sculpt, the shapewear brand, that's when we learned paid ads. And that's when we had such an advantage because we already understood content, we already understood audiences, we already understood how to optimize landing pages and optimize websites. We already understood how to get UGC and influencer marketing and all that stuff. So we had all the hard parts figured out. Running the ads is literally the easiest part possible, you know? And so that's why we had so much success with ads day one, was because everything else besides the button pushing, as I call it, was done. So...
Well, I was gonna say too, like, you guys are like 3 to 4 years ahead of like, or a lot of the marketers are today. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are like, you guys are running these playbooks that are like status quo today, but like back then it's like, no, people were still relying on affiliate. Like, they didn't know how to get traffic to their website whether, you know, and so they would do some like brick and mortar stuff as well. Like it's a very different game, and you guys were early, which seems awesome.
Yeah, we were very early to how the market was, you know, UGC was still like a hot word then. Like, I don't think, you know, people started coining that word like, I feel like 2018, we were hammering it way before that. So I think that was a big reason also why we were so successful, was because UGC also generally converted a lot better because people weren't really doing that as a whole on ads. And now it's like, it's much harder to have UGC work, because the reason why it works is it looks organic. Now it's customers know, are just more educated and are a lot more familiar with seeing UGC as an ad, just like a testimonial as is, like doesn't convert as well as it did back in 2017 when not everyone was using that.
Even like, I don't know, man, even like the subliminal stuff that you see from like a lot of like the athletes or like celebrities on Instagram, they can so nonchalantly be wearing like a Black Rifle Coffee t-shirt or like, I don't know, I wish I had better examples off the top of my head, but like they're getting paid for it. And like, it's kind of obvious.
I think that is different when it comes from someone who's influential because people want what they're doing and people want what they have because they want to be like that.
Okay. You know? I can see that.
For that reason, I think that works really well, and they don't have to hide being sponsored, you know, or whatever, because it's like, you know, for my favorite basketball player, I want what he's wearing. I want what he's doing. I want to know what supplements he's using to be like him, you know? So I think for that reason, it works for people who are people who are actually influential. That stuff is like, that's why, you know, the Kardashians, this and that, like they sell so much stuff, is because people, you know, want to be like them. And I think the same applies to other people who are actually influential. Not influencers as a whole, because not a lot of them have true influence. You know, they can get likes, but they can't drive purchase intent. They can't get people to purchase a product. But the people who do have influence.
That's a good point. I also do think that, like, to some degree, if you are going to have a big influencer partner up with a brand, it's almost more helpful for them to be very blunt and upfront about that partnership. Like the example that comes to mind for me is like, I see a ton of Instagram ads from Kevin Hart about Fabletics, right? And it's very clear that like Kevin Hart just partnered with Fabletics. I think he got some equity in the company or whatever. And now he's promoting it, and people are like, Fabletics is using the trust that his audience has to go and promote those shorts, right? And so I think like that, I'm not like dissing Kevin Hart, like dude's making money, good for him, right? But I think if he was making more organic posts where he was like trying to like be more subtle about it, it would feel almost less genuine, like compared to where it just says sponsor and they're white labeling the ad.
Totally. But also I think a lot of these celebrities or influencers, whatever, they're pretty particular with what goes on their main feed. So I assume that's probably a big reason why, you know, is like they're just super pretty. Like even on the Rap TV side, like we just had a rapper we were dealing with, did an interview. And like he'll post on a story, so he'll do whatever, but it's like, no, we don't post interviews, we don't post, you know, PR stuff on his main page. So for that reason, that's why I like that Kevin Hart, I feel like, might not want to do that. But I do agree with you. It's better for the brand and for the influencer if they're transparent about it. You know, like brand will get more loyalty, I feel like, and the influencer will get just better transparency to his followers. And understanding that like it's not you know why he's doing these ads.
What's cool is that like you're in this position now where you're young, you've been in the game now for a decade, and so like you can kind of see the way things have changed, the way your interests have changed and evolved, and like the type of businesses that you want to go and build. Like it seems like the average duration to date for you, and this is probably an unintentional thing for myself included, is like 3 to 4 years per business. And so whether that's, you know, Caffeine Digital, build that up back in 2000, I don't know if it was 2012 and like kind of let it fizzle out around 15, 16. You've got the e-commerce brands you started like the end of 2016. And I think you sold all of them in 2019. And so it seems like the average like life cycle of a lot of these businesses has been like 3 to 4 years. Do you think with the Snow Agency and with Rap TV and some of these other businesses, the plan is similar where you have the intention of like, you know, having a 3, 4, 5 year life cycle, or and then maybe exiting or moving on to like another interest, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, interestingly enough, my personal relationships have also been in that time frame. Rap TV is already older than 4 years, so it's 5 years old now. So I guess it's beyond that. The agency is about 3 years old. So really, for me, it really depends. Like, I do think that, you know, we already had a conversation around like what I really enjoy most doing and so forth. So I do think that after that 3 to 4 year horizon, you start losing as an operator a lot of what I enjoy doing most, you know? So it's like in the agency, like I'm no longer doing strategy. I'm no longer really getting in the weeds of it. Sure, I can here and there, mostly like a training tool for some of the marketers and whatnot, but like that's not the core fundamental job description of a CEO of an agency with that many employees. So at the same time, you know, it comes down to factors. It's really just thinking about what do I still enjoy doing this? Is there still more meat on the bone, so to speak? And that's like kind of like my decision making behind when I think it's time to move on or when it's time to focus on something else is really goes down to, do I just enjoy doing it still? You know, if I'm not waking up every day excited to work, excited to build, it's really hard to keep doing what you're doing. And it's like, even, you know, that's why I wanted to be an entrepreneur to begin with, was because I wanted to do what I enjoy doing. If you're not going through life loving what you're doing, it's really hard to be successful at it. So that's kind of like my thought process when it might be time to move on to something else. And at least with the brands, that was a big thing, is like, I just got sick of, you know, doing the same things and just different iterations of it years ago. And I thought, you know, what can I see myself doing for the next 10 years? So that was why I launched the agency. And if that time comes again, then that's when it might be time to move on. So.
Yeah, no, that's smart. I think that's well said. And honestly, probably for the best too. Like, I think the counter argument to that is always like, why not just hire an operator and kind of like build out this like empire? But I don't think it's always as simple as that. Especially for like a complex e-commerce brand.
Yeah. Well, for a counter to that also, it's like, yeah, you can counter that, but you can also say, who doesn't want to take some money off the table at the same time? So, you know,
absolutely.
I think acquisitions are great for that reason. And there's definitely risk involved and more stress with hire. It's not as easy as just saying, oh, let me hire an operator to, like you mentioned, to run this really dynamic business. And then you overseeing that, let's say part-time, like it's really not as easy as that. So even looking back, like I definitely think I made the right move. I don't think I would have wanted to hire an operator, because I still think that it would require a lot of work and extra stress for me. And a big reason why, because I wanted to, you know, you mentioned how many things I have on my plate currently. Like, I don't want to add more things. I don't want to accumulate more things, honestly. Start being more deliberate with my focus.
On the focus side, I think it might almost be interesting. I'm going to maybe toss up a question and take it how you want, whatever direction we can roll with it. But like, how do you think, for some degree, a lot of times people that are starting these businesses, and like yourself included, like you were just like, this sounds like almost like weird to say, but like a student of the game, like you like the idea of starting and growing these businesses so much that like, when you go to like meet with people, like I would imagine you probably say like, hey, something I do for fun is start businesses. Like, it's just like a hobby that I enjoy and something that I like doing. So I'd imagine the answer is probably gonna be like, you know, I'm not gonna stop and I don't wanna stop. But I also think the ultimate goal, like the high level goal of why a lot of people tell themselves that they start these businesses early on, is like, they want to make a lot of money. They want to amass like a ton of wealth, because it gives them like the economic mobility and like the ability to kind of choose where they spend their time. How do you think about like maybe building that wealth, or building like whatever, however you want to even like call it or think about it, over the next like 5, 10, 20 years? And I understand this is like a super broad question. So like, if the answer is as simple as like, I just want to start more businesses and like, you know, do whatever with the money, like I'm just curious how you think about it.
I, number one, first and foremost, really enjoy the process of building a business. You know, and then growing the business is fun. Like, I'm a very progress-oriented person, and I get fulfillment when I see a brand or business, whatever, grow and want to keep growing it. Like, that's genuinely fun to me. You know, for sure, I start businesses with the intention of eventually selling them. Like, I can't see myself ever running a business for 20, 30 years, giving it to my kids. Like, I don't know, like, at least right now, like I genuinely am not thinking about it that way. So that's how I just like go through the process when I, when, you know, but I only start a business if I do really, like, I don't do it with the sole intention of making money. I think money is a byproduct of having success in that. But I do it because I really enjoy the process. And the process is really more rewarding than the end result. And I think you'll see a lot of people say this. Like, I even just saw on the other day a Twitter thread about it. I think someone compared it to rock climbing. You know, it's like the process of rock climbing is more rewarding than just standing there at the top. Like, it really is that way in building a business. And because, you know, it's being retired, like, really isn't all that alluring to me. Like, I can't imagine myself just doing nothing for years on end. Sure, maybe 6 months traveling the world would be nice, but I can't see myself doing that forever. So for that reason, you know, money alone isn't enough. And especially once you have enough money where you can truly start, like, you can truly do whatever you want for the foreseeable future. Like, I feel like I'm in that place, then having more money doesn't necessarily make your life better. There's for sure diminishing returns. And I think that number is different for everyone based on how they live their life and their lifestyle and their goals and wants and whatnot. You know, someone who has $500,000 could be their number. Other people could be $100 million. It just depends on how you want to live your life. So for me, it's like kind of near that point where it's like I can really do what I want. Like, I have that freedom. I have that financial freedom. And coming to the point where, like, it's not just about money. It's like, where do I really enjoy spending my time? Where can I see myself making an impact? So yeah, that answers your question.
Yeah, no, well said. I also think, like, to your point on, like, the whole retirement side of things, like, I had some tweet a while back. It's like FIRE, financially independent, retire early, is like a more and more popular term these days. But, like, I don't know, for me personally, like, I feel like anyone who has the capability to go and actually retire early in, like, a sizable way does not want to, just because, like, if you can, like, if you got like 10 or 20 million in the bank at the age of 30, like, you're probably a killer. Like, you're probably very good at what you do. And I would be very surprised if you can, I guess, have the lack of ambition of wanting to go and, like, kind of sip pina coladas on, like, Naples beach, whatever, like that, like, year round. Like, I just don't think that's what a lot of people who have that capacity would want to do in the first place. You made a comment basically saying, like, you don't think you're going to want to own a business for, like, you know, a 10, 20 year kind of business, and that, like, probably building up these businesses and then selling them is kind of like more of your forte. Do you think that is true as well on the real estate side? Because I feel like, you know, businesses are a really good vehicle in order to go and grow that wealth or grow, like, accumulate cash and accumulate money. Real estate, index funds, things like that are a really good way to kind of, like, preserve that cash and, like, kind of put it to work and, like, put it in a protectable asset where, like, it can kind of pay you. And, like you said, you have a property manager, so it doesn't really take up too much of your time. Do you think that you'll probably just kind of keep funneling cash there and trying to build up that portfolio?
Yeah, I definitely do. So for me, real estate is simply accumulation. You know, I want to accumulate a portfolio, the biggest portfolio I can. So I definitely don't buy real estate with the intention of flipping it. That's not in my model. You know, it's like, I see real estate truly as, like, a retirement fund. It's like, you know, for entrepreneurs, you don't have, like, you can create your own IRA or whatever. But it's like, when I stop working, I do want to have that income keep coming in. So that's why at an early age, you know, I started building my real estate portfolio when I was like 24. Actually, I guess you could say I bought my first condo when I was like 21. So if you count that, which is now, I'm renting it out, which, so I guess it's now like an income producing property. But anyways, I buy those with the intention of keeping them. Also, because I don't need the money. If I needed the money, then sure, I'd consider selling some of it. But it's like, if I don't need that money, then I'd much rather it produce income for me passively than selling it and just having the money sit in my bank account. So that's how I see real estate. And it's like, you know, if I can get to the point where it's making a few million dollars a year passively by the time I'm retired, like, that's great, you know? So that's kind of like how I'm thinking about it. And real estate really is a long game because you need, and it's just accumulation and capital. And the cool thing about it is once you start building a big enough portfolio, it's like you have your own bank. You know, you can get creative mm-hmm. with it, refinance, you can do all these different things. So you can use that money to keep buying more properties and so forth. But you can only do that if you have that big portfolio. So it's definitely a long game for me.
Yeah, real estate, like a lot of other businesses, like, you know, you've been in the digital marketing world now for 10 years, and you can already see just from seeing the trends and seeing who's stayed around and who's come and gone, it gets easier the longer that you're in it. Real estate is absolutely the same too. Like that first deal might be the toughest thing you do because it seems big and scary and there's a lot of zeros involved and things like that. But once you've been in that game for a couple of years, it's easier to borrow. It's easier to find deals. You have more capital to hire people to manage them. Like it gets exponentially easier the longer you're in. So totally agree with you there. I think, like, honestly, man, we might have to bring you back on the podcast for another episode, because there's a lot that I just know we're not going to cover. I know your agency, you know, you launched Clora, gut health brand. We didn't even get into like any of the real stuff around Rap TV, and I wish we did. But I think for now, people will find this episode super interesting, hearing your background, your story, and inspiring. At least if people want to go and maybe check you out, follow along with some of the stuff you're building over the next couple of years, where can they go and check you out?
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am Dan Snow. Instagram, Dapper, DAPPER. And if you want to shoot me an email, get in touch. My email is dan@thesnowagency.com.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Daniel.
Thanks a lot.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.